It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and today our special guest is Dr. Jared Bernstein. He's with the White House Council of Economic Advisors, set to join us in just a few moments. First off, Lance Honig, chief of the crops branch of USDA's National Ag Statistics Service, on response to USDA's acreage survey.
For any farmers out there who maybe received the survey but haven't had a chance to get that filled out yet, get that back to us if you could. Either go online and complete it. You can do that securely with the information you were provided. You can put it in the mail, or chances are very good that you're going to be contacted by one of our enumerators. So please, please, please take the time when you hear from them to go ahead and spend just a few minutes getting that valuable information to them so you can help us make these reports as accurate and as valuable as possible.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Dr. Jared Bernstein, who's with the Council of Economic Advisors at the White House. Welcome back to the show.
It's a pleasure to be with you again.
You know, I believe the last time we spoke, I said we're going to talk music before our conversation is over, and we didn't have an opportunity to do that. But
correct that today.
One of the questions I asked you is that if we were looking at beats per minute, a song in just beats per minute, where would the economy be? And you said, well, it's getting faster. It's getting better. It's getting more up tempo. Where would you put us at?
Interesting. I would say at this point, we're moving from a aggressive up tempo, high powered swinging jazz set, to something more steady, more stable, more kind of a moderate, upbeat. Melody with some very nice horns and rhythm section cooking along in the background, if that helps me. And to be a little bit more concrete and take off my music hat and put on my economics hat, we were really growing at a breakneck pace coming out of the pandemic. I mean, when this president got here, he implemented plans that unleashed the fastest recovery on record. Unemployment fell faster than it ever has in 2021. We got a jobs report this morning. We've been adding 400,000 jobs a month over the past 3 months on average, including 390K in May. We've got manufacturing jobs growing at the fastest rate in 30 years. So there are lots of there was a lot of speed coming out of that trough, as it were. But, you know, economies, as they move from the initial recovery phase to a steadier, stabler pace of growth as the expansion matures, that's kind of what we're looking at now, and at least where we think we're headed. So we think we're in a transition to that more moderate growth.
Now, one of the other topics that kind of pops in as we talk about the economy has been inflation. And obviously, there's nobody doubting the fact that we're seeing inflation. How do you see it, and how does that fit into our storyline?
I would say that inflation, both in this country and in every other advanced country, we actually now have inflation growing more quickly in many of the countries of Europe, is a function of a few things. One, a strong demand. I told you coming out of the pandemic, in no small part thanks to the rescue plan, families and businesses were able to get back to their economic health more quickly. Shots in arms, checks in pockets made a real difference, family balance sheets, kind of the savings, debit sides of the ledger look pretty strong, particularly relative to past recovery. So the demand side has been pretty strong. The supply side has been very constrained. We know we had supply chain problems. Some of those still persist. We know that China was in a lockdown. And then, and COVID was, of course, very much in that mix. Now, you add to that Putin's unprovoked aggression against the sovereign nation of Ukraine, and you really kind of explain the inflation phenomenon. I think the thing for listeners to recognize that maybe isn't always so clear is that inflation is, as I said, elevated everywhere, but one of the advantages that we have is this backdrop of such a strong labor market and household financial balance sheets in better shape. That said, we're not resting on any laurels here. The president has called reducing inflation, easing those pressures, helping family budgets his top domestic priority. And we've been very active in that space. I'm happy to talk about our activities if that would be useful. So one of the first things that we worked on is something I mentioned a bit ago, which is supply chains. We hired an envoy to be our government's envoy to the ports on the West Coast, Los Angeles, and Long Beach. And if you look at some of the real granular statistics out there, the amount of time that containers are spent in the ports, they call it dwell time. Dwell times are back down to rates that are much closer to pre-pandemic. Goods are moving from ship to shelf with great speed, such that shelves, aside from the baby formula problem, which is a separate set of initiatives from us, shelves are just about as well stocked as they were before the pandemic. So we've managed to help there. At the pump, real challenges there. This is a global price, of course, and I mentioned the impact of Putin's invasion. That's been a real shock to commodity prices, energy most particularly, and refinery capacity has also been pretty low. But the president has helped by releasing 180 million barrels of oil from the strategic reserves the government controls, getting some of our friends in other countries to release another 60 million. Folks have probably heard the OPEC announcement of their kicking up their production. And relevant to many of our ag friends, particularly in the Midwest, the president has provided waivers for E15 ethanol gasoline. So those are some efforts there as well.
We talk about the economy, and I think there's, and you mentioned it earlier, the deficit and reducing that federal deficit. It has come down, but still, even a recent House Budget Committee hearing where they're discussing with the CBO the future and projections for the deficit. Is that on your radar?
Oh, my goodness. That's been on my radar ever since I've been in this business. So that is an area that we pay very close attention to. I think the first thing people need to know is that in this year, 2022, we just heard from the very budget office you mentioned that the deficit is expected to come down, to be reduced by $1.7 trillion with a T. That's the largest single year of deficit reduction in the history of those records. Now, look, part of that is, of course, fiscal policy coming off and winding down. But a big part of that, about half of it, stems from increased revenues that relate very closely to the strong economic backdrop. So this kind of links the first part of our conversation back to here. We talked about the tightest job market in generations. We talked about families having good balance sheets. We've talked about people getting back to work, earning wages that, of course, spin off tax revenue. About half of that $1.7 trillion is attributable to higher revenues than expected. So that's been a very important part of the story. By the way, that also helps with these inflationary pressures. A diminished deficit means, less government spending, and that should help ease some inflation, too.
We covered a lot of ground here, and we started with the music side of this, and most might not know this and why I even brought music into it, but music has been such a part of your life, and a degree from Manhattan School of Music. Is music still a part of your life?
Oh, it is an integral part, and I was just thinking, it's often on Friday that I go home, and these Fridays tend to be hectic, especially when we have a job report, and I put on a few special pieces. And just to name one, just in case your listeners want to do this too, do it with me today at 6 or 7 o'clock Eastern time, and we can enjoy this spiritually together. Is I listen to a piece by J.S. Bach called the Italian Concerto. It's a lot of times concerto, you think a piece play with an orchestra. No, this is just a solo piano piece, but it is, in my mind, just about the pinnacle of musical creation, and that's, again, the Italian Concerto by J.S. Bach.
Again, what a pleasure to have you on. Will you come back and see us soon?
It would be my pleasure. I always enjoy our conversations, and next time I'll think of something from the jazz oeuvre to share with the audience, okay?
Dr. Jared Bernstein is a member of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. He joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.
It's time to get serious about just how good your tractor can be with the new Fendt 900, the ultimate row crop tractor, purpose-built to be the hardest-working, most reliable, most comfortable tractor you can buy. With the best maintenance, service, and warranty program around, it's Fendt. It's time, and it's here. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Dr. Jared Bernstein with the White House Council of Economic Advisors.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Joe Jansen's with the University of Illinois looks at export projections for corn and soybeans.
Another source of uncertainty is the demand side, and particularly export sales, which tends to be the most volatile usage category on the balance sheet. Right now, we see record levels of export sales commitments for the 2022-23 marketing year. While 2021-22 was a very strong year for U.S. exports, we're on pace to exceed that, particularly if we see large export sales over the next few weeks and months. USDA export sales data show about 200 million bushels of export sales commitments for the new crop marketing year. And that puts us well on track to reach the level projected in USDA's latest supply and demand estimates. On the soybean side, we see even stronger export sales pace to date. While export sales for the 21-22 marketing year are strong, particularly in the late months of the marketing year when we've seen greater export sales as the Brazilian soybean crop came in much lower than expected, and the world turned to U.S. exports to meet soybean needs. We see almost 500 million bushels in export sales for this new crop marketing year, which is a record sales pace. Higher early new crop export sales are typically seen in periods of high prices like we have at present. The question is whether these current record level export sales commitments for 2022-23 can turn into greater exports for the entire marketing year. Some of this buying is clearly precautionary as the world worries about the possibility of even higher prices. However, we're on pace to see strong U.S. export sales in the new crop marketing year.
Again, Dr. Joe Jansen with the University of Illinois. Well, our special guest today has been White House Council of Economic Advisor member, Dr. Jared Bernstein, it's the Agribusiness Report.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
If you want more from a compact or utility tractor, and at Livingston Machinery, you'll find more. More of the newest Massey Ferguson tractors, offering more versatility, more durability, and more performance. Stop by today and find out how Massey Ferguson is expanding the possibilities of what a great tractor can be, and why a Massey Ferguson will be the last tractor you'll ever need. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Brad Rippey, meteorologist, USDA.
46% of the country reporting very poor to poor pasture and rangeland conditions. It's a 4-point improvement from last week's 50%. 24% of the country with good to excellent pasture and rangeland conditions. That's up 2 points from a week ago. Looking at the good side of things, mostly from the Mississippi Valley to the East Coast, a number of states reporting pastures at least 70% good to excellent. That list includes Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, and Pennsylvania. We've had a cool wet spring in the Northwest, and that has actually brought some recovery of pastures and rangelands there. Idaho leading the Northwest 71% good to excellent. As we look at the flip side, though, the Southwest remains the core area for significant pasture and rangeland stress. Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas all reporting more than half of the rangeland and pastures in very poor to poor shape. We've also seen incomplete recovery from last year's drought damage across some of the northern areas, led by Montana, still struggling with drought there. 55% of the rangeland and pastures are very poor to poor.